Well, good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. What in the world will we talk about today? We have a lot to talk about, and we will get to it. And I want to introduce everybody. And I don't know. Hopefully, you're all in good moods. Yeah.
Every time you say something like that, hopefully you're all in a good mood and you look at me.
I was looking at everybody.
Because you don't think...
Would you say I looked at everybody?
No, you looked at Alan.
Okay.
And the boss's mood affects everybody else, so it's justified.
Yeah, that's true. I'm in a good mood, but I went to go see Sean Cassidy in concert last night in Saratoga. And it was amazing!
Really?
It was really great. It was fantastic.
What time did you go?
Beautiful evening. Well, that's the question, yeah. Alan. I got home about 10:15.
That's nothing.
I didn't think so. And then, but then I had to do the stories, and I already had.
Oh, you mean what we get in the mail every night?
Right. And going over what, you know, our docket, as I call it, yeah. I had already gotten messages from Jim and from Kristen wondering where the hell they were, because they usually come much earlier.
And I wanted to go to bed.
I know you did. I wanted to go
I'm
to bed.
Jim.
And I had been in bed for 4.5 hours.
But I,
bunch of sleepy old men.
But I came in, and then, but I was, you know, sort of jazzed from the concert. But I had such a great time, and I went into it miserable because I had spent most of the day embroiled in a horrible fight with my dermatologist.
Oh, boy. This is getting better and better.
What was the issue?
Okay, now, Alan, you go to a fair number of doctor's appointments.
Yes,
Let me ask you this question. Okay, so on Friday of last week, okay, so none of you need to know this, but for the past, since mid-February to early March, I have been dealing with an excruciating rash over anywhere between 30% and 60% of my body.
No kidding.
Okay?
Oh,
so
gosh.
It is horrible. It's in my hair. It's in my ears.
Oh,
it's
oh
in...
Oh, my gosh.
You don't notice a lot of it because, and I'm not even making this up, makeup, thank God, but... You see, anyway, it's like completely taken over my body. So,
you have a big body.
Thank you for noticing.
And what are the symptoms of monkeypox?
Yeah, well, exactly. It's breaking at the same time as monkeypox, and you don't tell a hypochondriac that you have some sort of skin rash.
And it might be the virus.
And monkeypox.
I wouldn't know anything about that.
So the doctor says, well, this is a few weeks ago, says, well, we need to take a biopsy.
Oh.
All right. And she said, okay, we're going to take a biopsy. She said, don't worry. It's just like you fell off your bike and you skinned your knee. That's how painful this is going to be. And she did the procedure. And I turned to her and I said, what the hell kind of bike rides did you take as a child? There was a point where she had a little tiny plastic cup and she put in the biopsy and it sounded like she dropped in a jelly bean. I mean, it was just like it made that kind of noise.
More coffee, anyone?
Yeah. So, all right. So she calls up 2 weeks later and says, on Friday morning, as I'm walking out the door, she says, you know, we thought this was going to be straightforward, but we found, quote, several anomalies in your biopsy. Okay. And then with a somewhat increased urgency said, we really need to get you in here soon. To do some more testing. And I said, well, yeah, I'll be there. And she said, so the staff comes in at 9. They'll call you. We'll get you in here on Monday. I want to do a test on Monday. I want to do a test on Tuesday. I want to do a test on Thursday.
Oh,
and I said, okay. And she said, now in the meantime, stop taking any medication because we don't want it to alter the results of the test. Okay. So all weekend, I'm one.
Leprosy.
That's right. I'm one itchy mess. And then she said, well, you know, the anomalies, like it could be one of many things. It could be because of supply chain issues. It could be a new ingredient in your detergent. It could be an artificial flavor or color that you have, or pause. It could be scabies. Okay,
scabies.
What?
Remember that good one. All right. So either something has gone horribly wrong with my Arm & Hammer detergent.
Well, you need more lemon.
I've had maybe one too many raspberry seltzers, or I had a dalliance with a sex worker in Troy. One of those. So
do we get to vote?
No. Well, I've ruled out what I've ruled out. So. So then on, so nobody calls on Friday. Right. Nobody calls Friday. And so I leave a message late Friday afternoon. Nobody calls. I said, all right, well, we'll hear on Monday. Nobody calls on Monday. I leave two messages on Monday. Nobody calls. Yesterday, I left three messages. Finally, woman called. Could not have been meaner. Just could not have been meaner. Nasty. And I said, well, okay, so then, Alan, does this sound familiar?
No.
So you have anomalies in your biopsy, and we want you to get in right away.
Oh boy!
And then she says, "I can get you in the first week in August."
Oh my God!
And I said,
"What?"
I said, "Hold it! How did we go from Friday, saying that you wanted me in the chair on Monday, to sometime in August?" So, and then she was very nasty at that point, and she said, "Oh well, I'm sorry. Is your back on fire?" And I said, "Yeah, because I'm not treated for anything right now. I'm not taking anything."
Right.
So the office. So I that call didn't end well. And I think she hung up on me, but I wasn't overly mean.
Wait. She really hung up on
yes.
you. And
yes.
What did she say as the phone was going down?
Oh, my God.
Because I said, I kept on trying to talk to her, and she kept on interrupting me. And I said, can I please just finish what I'm going to say? Because I don't know what to do. And because here's what I want to know. I don't care. Okay, fine, August. But what can we do from now until August so I'm not in excruciating pain?
Yes.
And she didn't really care about that. So she hung up the phone. Okay.
Uh-oh.
So a few minutes later, the office manager calls me. The office manager.
Wow.
And the office manager is delightful. Absolutely delightful. And she says to me, I think we may have gotten off on a wrong foot. Yeah. And she said, I know that can be a pain in the ass. And I said, the pain in the ass is what got me into the doctor's office in the first place.
Very witty, John.
This is good. This is one of the best preamble
shows. This is like Garrison Keillor. I know.
So she says, I'm so sorry that you had that experience with our receptionist. I can get you in. Let me work on the schedule. Give me 2 minutes and I'll be back. The next voice I hear is the mean receptionist. Who says, no. I was told that I had to find you 3 dates. And then gives me the exact 3 dates that she had given me before in August. To which I replied, okay, but just tell me what I'm supposed to do. And they said, well, we put in a triage ticket. What's that? Yeah. We put in a triage ticket. The doctor will notify you within a half hour.
Triage meaning they're going to get everybody in.
Still haven't heard from anybody.
You will now.
Well, I don't know.
You will now, exactly.
Meanwhile, how's the rash?
It's horrible.
Can we see it on the break?
Yes. You know what?
don't itch.
I think you need to go to a new dermatologist.
Don't scratch.
Well, I think you're right. I think I need to, but I don't know what to do now because they obviously hate me, and I don't know what, although I'm not sure what I did, other than try to stop itching. But,
does the medication help the itch?
No, nothing. There was a fungal medication, there's viral medication, and neither have worked. And even for the record, so none of you are skeeved out, even the scabies medication didn't work. So, yeah. Which, by the way,
can we catch it?
Which is really, no.
How far
no,
away are you?
No, it's not contagious. Kelly made sure of that. And I won't give their name.
So don't we have to take a break?
I won't give their name on the...
for another 6 minutes.
I won't give their name on the air, but if you want to know who they are, message me. I'll tell you.
Well, I have a feeling some dermatologist's office that's listening is hopefully going to call you and offer you a spot today to, like, give you some relief and figure out what's going on. That's horrible.
That would be lovely. But I don't know. I'm not looking for that. What I'm looking for is, you know, I think when people say, this is actually how the conversation started in our household, was Kelly and I were talking about job shortages, that people can't find ice cream scoopers and people can't find people who are working in hotels and restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, that is all awful. But it's different when you're talking about healthcare, right? Like we're short-staffed in healthcare. And that's different when you don't have enough people to take care of the patients that you have to take care of. I would note then maybe you don't tell the patient, we have to get you in the chair on Monday because this is serious, and then not be able to get you in until August.
Put your mean girl on it.
All right.
For what it's worth,
wait, that's it?
If you want to get a dermatologist appointment, I tried to get one at... The current waiting time in the Albany area is 8 months.
Whoa.
Say that again. What is 8 months?
8 months. If you call right now
to most of the dermatologist offices and say, I need an appointment.
Yes.
If it's not something desperate, it's about 8 months.
Now, see, I disagree with you.
Desperate.
And you know why I disagree with you? Because I think even if it was desperate, you would still wait 8 months.
Yes, that may be.
Yeah.
I was sitting there just the other day in my dermatologist's office, and a woman came in, and she thought that what she could do is just say, I need a dermatologist. And that was not going to work.
We had another dermatologist, and I'm not going to...
Oh, my God, this is Medical Monday.
I'm not going to... Medical Monday. We had a dermatologist on Medical Monday who seemed like a really nice guy. This is a long time ago. We had this guy on Medical Monday. I had a growth in my head.
Oh, my God.
I'll show that to you during the break, Rosemary. And I swear to God this happened. We're in there, she was a PA. She came in and she said, "Oh, we have to take that out, the growth." And so basically, we go coring for it. So they take like this thing and they go in and they go. So, and I swear to God, for all that is holy, on my mother and my nieces and my dogs, I say to you, this is true. At one point, she's putting the thing in, and she's going, boy, I can't get this in. And she turns and she says to Kelly, could you give me a hand? I thought, you know, I love my wife very much, but as far as I know, had never gone to any dermatological schools. So I later get the coring sample back, and she said, well, we didn't really get what we needed because I left half of it in your head.
Oh, God. Yeah. Oh, jeez. Oh,
so then I went to a new dermatologist, and that's, you know, and then that's where I am now.
Well, time for a new one. Maybe there's a naturopathic doctor or some kind of person who works with salts, who's listening, who's like, I've got the perfect thing.
Which doctor?
I guarantee you there is somebody like that.
Well, I just want to know, and this is why
you're gonna get lots of calls with suggestions.
This is
a new angle on the January 6th committee hearings. I've not heard this before.
I love our listeners because I have four letters in my box right now. One of them says, oh, my God, I'm so sorry you're going through that. One says,
right.
Enough already. Another one says, I know a great doctor near you. And then the other one says, I don't give a S. All right. So with that, we move on.
And everybody thought I was the hypochondriac in the group.
Really? Yeah. Really? You just got to run for your money.
Well, I don't mean to be.
No, not at all.
Is that hypochondriac?
No, absolutely not. Joking.
Is that hypochondriacal?
No.
Highly amused.
Yeah.
No.
I mean, I don't know.
No.
Yeah.
Not at all.
I don't know. Anyway, so when we come back from our break, we'll talk about the dramatic hearing that took place yesterday.
Did you notice something on her arm?
Yeah. and I'll show Rosemary my rash, and we'll be fine. Everything will be good. We welcome your letters. It's panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. You know, maybe even we'll add a few moments onto the show to make up for what I just gobbled
good
up.
Good stuff, Joe.
We'll be back right after this.
Aww.
God knows I don't want to extend this any further. I just want to get to two quick letters that people
about your rash.
Well, I just want to clear something up. First of all, I've gotten a couple of letters from people who are taking me to task for saying that scabies wasn't contagious. No, that's not what I said. What I said was that my rash, which is not scabies, is not contagious.
That's what you said.
That's what I said. So I just wanted to clear that up. Also, there was this one, which I thought was interesting, because you're right. All these people are telling us like really great things. But this one guy was saying that it could be caused by a tick bite. Wouldn't that be interesting? If it was from a tick bite. I don't know. Anyway, thank you all very much. It's here we go. We'll reading the subject lines to these letters is fantastic. I want to talk about the January 6th hearing and what happened yesterday. This is what the media writer in the New York Times yesterday called a bottle episode, which allows one character in a large story have the floor, and they explain their story arc from the beginning to end. And that is exactly what Cassidy Hutchinson did yesterday before the January 6th committee, led in large part by Representative Liz Cheney. There's really sensational stuff, of course, that comes out of this, but we learned a lot about the rage of the president. We learned about, there's the story about the dinner being thrown up against the wall. There's the story about the president going after the steering wheel of the car that was bringing him back after the rally because he wanted to go down to the Capitol. But at the end of the day, the really most horrible part of this was that it became clear through her testimony and which was not cross-examined, as Rosemary continues to remind us, that this was very much a plan. The president did not want people at the rally to go through metal detectors. They knew that people were going to be armed. He felt they weren't going to hurt him, so let them come in. And then this idea of wanting to go down to the Capitol, which I can't even imagine what would have gone on at that point. They're not here to hurt me, Cassidy Hutchinson testified, that Mr. Trump said as he demanded the security checkpoints be removed outside his rally on the Ellipse on January 6th, knowing that many of his supporters were armed and threatening violence. Take the effing mags away. Let my people in. They can march to the Capitol from here. It was an act of vanity by Mr. Trump, who wanted his crowd to appear as large as possible. That recalled his first day in office, which was consumed by his false claims about the size of the crowd at his inauguration. Ms. Hutchinson recounted it as she laid out a day of chaos in the White House in which the president's top advisors sought to rein him in, and Mr. Trump pressed repeatedly to join up with his supporters. She recalled being told one particularly dramatic moment in which an irate President Trump tried to grab the wheel of his vehicle from a Secret Service agent, and when he was told he could not go to the Capitol to join his supporters, an account that the former president quickly denied and that Secret Service officials said would be rebutted in forthcoming testimony. The revelations over a two-hour hearing tied Mr. Trump more closely to the violence that disrupted the certification of President Biden's victory, raising fresh questions about whether Mr. Trump could face criminal charges for his actions on January 6th. At the end, Representative Liz Cheney, Republican of Wyoming and the panel's vice chairwoman, hinted at yet another potential area of liability, suggesting that Mr. Trump and his allies would be engaging in an effort to tamper with witnesses and obstruct the committee's work. A lot there. That's just the top. Alan.
Well, you know, I was transfixed and I watched her testimony from beginning to end, and I thought it was extraordinary, and it told us something. I mean, I don't know about you, Rosemary, the idea that a president of the United States, who after all is the person with his finger on the button, right? was so discombobulated that he would pick up a meal and throw it against the wall. Because think about that. Think about being annoyed and throwing something against the wall. We've always known this guy wasn't quite right. And, you know, the idea that we are seeing it real time right now is very troubling to me because, you know, the world could perish because this jerk was so, you know, obsessional that he would change everything because of that obsession. So I was really just completely captivated by this tale.
It was a patent place of an episode. It's getting like to the end of, you know, Game of Thrones, and you just can't wait until next week for the next one. That's how I am about these hearings right now. Even at the same time, I've said that they're completely, they don't mean anything unless Merrick Garland acts. However, I have to revise that. I think this has been an amazing experience to have it all put out together. It is like watching a great TV show. And Merrick Garland does appear to be moving. He's subpoenaing people and phones in the case of John Eastman. So it looks like it's moving forward. And I think that that was an amazing witness yesterday. She's with a pretty young, intelligent woman with no axe to grind. She's conservative. Her credentials are not Democratic or liberal or anything that at all calls her bias into question. She was careful to say what she knew, what she had just heard, and from whom she had heard it. It would be very hard to refute her, and I think the comments, the long series of tweets that Trump put out later on his own network pointed that out. I hardly knew her, he said, which is the number one thing he says when anybody accuses him of anything, even his children. No, I hardly knew that daughter.
Or even the women that he's accused of having.
I know. Oh, she's not my type. Never saw her. I never knew this woman except I heard a lot of bad things about her. That just did not hold at all to anyone who saw or heard her on the stand. She was quite composed and completely in a position to know everything she talked about. It was very damning testimony to Trump, not in the sense that she pointed out a whole bunch of charges to be made him, but it's just going to prejudice anybody who's hearing the story now, that this is a man with a childish temperament, with a great sense of revenge, and with a recklessness that's very frightening in a U.S. president.
Mm-hmm. And I thought the corroboration of the reaction to the Pence stuff. So she is the first one who has, you know, sort of said she heard him said on the record under oath that, you know, when the protesters were calling for, you know, hang Pence. Mike Pence, right, that Trump was sitting there and not only not tweeting to stop, but said, you know, they're
willing
right
to go along with it.
Go
yeah
along with it. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
And you know, we've heard things that Ivanka was sending him tweets saying stop this and other things, and here we have someone who's, you know, first person able to say this craziness was real.
I mean, don't forget they showed yesterday that he wanted to lead that march. He wanted to take part in and lead the insurrection. Wow. And his lawyer is right. The minute he stepped on Capitol land, Capitol property, that would have been trying to influence or stop or obstruct the proceeding certification. It's just crazy.
Kristen?
Yeah, it was really, it was, for me, it was like the two parts of what might be actionable by the Department of Justice in terms of, you know, the witnesses and Trump, you know, him tampering with the Trump allies and threatening them before Congress. That seemed like something that was pulled out as actionable by the Department of Justice. And the rest was like moral, ethical, just horrifying to think of just how disgusting this man is with his anger and kind of the kind of atmosphere that everybody was living with inside the White House for those 4 years. I think we all got such a clear picture of how people must have been just walking on eggshells about, like, you know, when is he going to blow up? What's he going to do? What's he going to break? What's he going to? And that's horrifying. Mm-hmm. You know, that was horrifying to hear the kind of atmosphere folks were living in at that time. And then I've also found myself getting caught up in being like, how was he in a position to actually reach for the steering wheel? That I don't know if you can all help me, but like my understanding is like if the president is inside the beast, they are nowhere near the steering wheel. So that I couldn't wrap my head around that one. Maybe you all can help me
late at night.
But I agree with everything else everybody was saying.
I'm sorry, I was going to say, Kristen, that late last night, an expert, an investigative reporter who is an expert on the Secret Service, spoke on television, and she said there's no way in the beast, which is the main limousine, that could have happened. But she added, he wasn't in the beast that day. So I don't know if the conversation was reported incorrectly or the vehicle is wrong. This is something that clearly is going to need more testimony. But in the SUV, which the picture that they kept showing, Trump driving away from the January 6th remarks in a vehicle, it's an SUV that is also owned by the Secret Service. And in that, you could lunge over and perhaps not, Carol Leon said, not perhaps grab the wheel, but very get close to it so that the driver might say, Mr. President, please take your hand off the wheel.
I have to say, though, that as you were listening to it and it was unfolding, that was the moment where you're like, do you think that really happened? Like, it was hard.
It was frustrating because if it had been me and I'm hearing the story and the guy sitting there right there, I would have turned to him and said, really, that's what happened? You know, what? Ask him. And I guess she couldn't. She's a subordinate. She was not in a position to say, what the heck are you doing? Well, how did that happen?
Well, the Secret Service apparently had some problems with the testimony, you know, the way this happened. So it'll be interesting.
This has got to be clarified, for sure. Although, at the very least, that was third party. She heard it. So it's got to be, you got to have any kind of legal proceeding would have the original.
But I will say that when they showed the SUV driving away, there were some close-ups, and you could see Trump was not sitting back in the back seat. He was up.
I saw that, but are we sure that's from the same time, Jim?
Well, that's the problem. You can't. But at least at some point in the car, he was not sitting back quietly. You know, he was gesticulating and very close to the driver.
So he had a madman who was president of the United States who with his finger on the nuclear button.
But we knew that, right?
Which we knew.
Well,
wait
a second. We knew it, but, you know, there's always knowing it and, quote, knowing it. And this is tough.
The left believes that Trump launched to grab the steering wheel from Secret Service agents. Really? Writes William. Those agents on the scene refute that it never happened. Wake up, panel. A story that sounds preposterous is preposterous. The star witness account collapsed within an hour of her testimony.
Oh, please.
From the beginning, this January 6th committee has shown a pattern of an ineptness and complete lack of awareness. The panel's wishful thinking has prompted up this Stalinist show trial like it's the Watergate hearings.
It's not a trial, though. Well, it's not his life and freedom are not at stake in any way. And it is theater. He's right about that. But I really dispute the quality. I'd say it's pretty great and gripping.
It's definitely great and gripping. And it is true that, you know, what sort of difference we're seeing that the January 6th insurrection is definitely, you know, the legitimacy of the election and that ongoing, you know, theory that Republicans have is really driving these elections. And so I find it hard to know whether the fact that this is on prime time, this is certainly affirming all of us, you know, but I don't know if it's driving other people away who are thinking this is just being done for show, like the letter that you just read. This is just being theatrical. This is just putting it out there and being sensational, and whether that's going to actually backfire.
I do want to read a letter, and then we have to take a break, but I think Terry makes a good point. If you haven't done so already, could the panel discuss this question? What were the motives of Trump to go to the Capitol? Until yesterday, I had thought his motives were to stay away to avoid being implicated. What would he have done had he been there?
Well, I think he knew that he was in a bad place, and then that if he went, he would be seen as organizing his people and being with his people.
There were discussions, she testified, about a speech before anybody went into the Capitol or him leading them into the House, which, wow. I mean, the ex-president coming in, walking in on the certification. No wonder his lawyers were flipping out. He would have committed obstruction of a procedure on a camera.
Was he ex-president at that stage?
No.
No, you're right. Yeah, it would have been the president.
The last days of
his
administration.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We have many more letters. We'll talk more about this. WAMC, it's panel at WAMC.org. There you go. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC. Talking about the dramatic hearing that took place on Capitol Hill yesterday, it was a bonus round for the committee. They had said initially that they weren't going to have any more hearings until after the July 4th holiday. Then Monday, there was a great deal of speculation that there would be one on Tuesday. Secrecy was all around it. And then at 1 o'clock yesterday, Cassidy Hutchinson went before the committee, and it was a doozy. I think wherever you are, there was a lot of information there that we're going through right now. I want to go on a couple of things, getting to some of the themes of the letter, of the letters. A lot of people zeroing in on the detail of the the hands around a Secret Service agent's neck. David says, assaulting a law enforcement officer by anyone in this country, even the president, is illegal. Grabbing the Secret Service officer by the clavicle is assaulting an officer. And Paul writes, the Secret Service has a problem with Cassidy's testimony. Okay, Tony and agents, go to the committee and testify under oath and refute the report. Be like Cassidy. They won't. And that's probably because she's telling the truth. That's because she's telling the truth.
Well, and just to be clear, she said, she never said this happened. She said, this is what these guys told me happened. Okay. I mean, everybody's focusing on this one because it's the one thing in how many hours that maybe didn't happen. So all of the other things she talks about, telling about, you know, Trump being okay with the fact that, you know, the audience, that he wanted people let in despite the fact that they had guns because they weren't going to be pointing it at him. Who exactly did he think they were going to be used on? You know, what would he do at the Capitol? Well, we don't have, you know, like the smoking gun that says he said, I'm going there and going to go in and shoot people. But, you know, his walking into that room would have been, you know, basically created a constitutional crisis because technically he's not allowed in there. He's an executive officer. That's why the vice president certifies the ballots, not the president, because the president is considered to be representing a different branch. The vice president, even though he's in the executive branch, is also the speaker of the Senate, so the tiebreaker in the Senate.
Not that I want to disagree with you ever, but you know, what's to prevent a citizen of the United States walking into the Capitol, meaning the president?
Well, because if
you can, it's a restricted area. That's why the guards were keeping people out.
He could walk into the Capitol.
You're telling me that if Donald Trump showed up there.
Oh, no, they would have let him in, of course. Of course. Come
but,
on.
But if Donald Trump on a regular day to a regular Congress session walks in,
yeah,
it's unclear to me that he has the right to do that without clearing it first.
Even for this, State of the Union, you have to be invited by the Speaker of the House as the president
exactly.
to come.
Exactly. That's right. Mm-hmm. So, so the president, apparently because of separation of powers, cannot walk into a Senate or congressional activity without something. And somebody who's a lawyer, I'm sure, is going to write in and tell us whether what I said is true, whether it's law or whether it's practice. But it's
on
certainly
the other hand,
been the practice for
that
200 years.
That would be one among the least of the federal laws and regulations and tradition that Trump would have trampled on.
And they knew it.
Yeah.
They knew it and they told him that.
Yeah.
Right.
And they no one ever did anything to him when he did trample the rules, like holding the political convention at the White House, total violation of federal regulations. Not even an investigation was on television.
So
those are exactly the types of rules that he had zero respect for.
Right.
And just flaunted
them. Yep.
Jim writes, in order for Garland, Merrick Garland, to bring charges, the politics demand he be supported by the majority of the public.
Right.
So the
true.
Show trial, quote unquote, is important. That is why lack of full panel and cross-examination. And that from Jim.
Jim, I agree with you. This has been very helpful to Merrick Garland's prosecution of this case.
Well, and the other thing is, I think prior to this one, a lot of people were saying it's still important because we're getting an archival documentation of what happened on that day. Mm-hmm. Right? So some people are primarily viewing this as attacking, you know, what did Trump do and should Trump go to jail? And I won't say my comments on that since Alan has and I have always agreed on exactly the answer to that question.
Yes, he should go to jail.
But the actually having as documented as possible what happened, that this wasn't, you know, that this myth about it was Antifa, this myth about, these were just tourists. I mean, given the testimony to date, and especially yesterday's testimony, no way you can say those things. You can't say these were just tourists when the Secret Service had a list of all the different weapons that they had already found at these magnetometers and things like that. I mean, unbelievable.
And Mark Meadows was saying it could get really, really bad on January 6th.
And asking for a pardon.
That
and he's
the
destroying
other thing.
All the china in the White House.
Well, not all of it. The plate he was eating off.
But she testified that, no, this was not the first time she had seen him do that.
It's still not all.
No, I know. You're right.
But it's expensive.
I don't think there's a,
but it's expensive. China paid for
it.
It's
porcelain, damn.
Let's be honest. One is too many for anybody. And
for a president.
For a president.
Well, you didn't grow up in my house. That's all I got to say.
Oh, gosh. Well, thank goodness then.
Maybe Trump is Jewish.
John writes in says, panel, as much as I'm on board with this panel and their commitment to returning sanity into the White House, I fear things aren't changing anytime soon. As an example, I routinely tune into, no need to advertise, but I'll mention for you, Howie Carr. The collective yawn and denial over there is jaw-dropping, sad times indeed. Well, Howie Carr, for those of you who do not know, is a Rush Limbaugh-type host out of the Boston area. And so I'm not really, you know, overly surprised that that is what you're getting. I am impressed with the select committee, writes Lee. They're fulfilling their obligation to the country by getting the truth out. With discipline, they have not turned this into a soapbox. They see truthful, honest adults in action. We need it because the Republicans and right-wing media are being just the opposite. So let me ask you, panel, does it matter that the people we are hearing from, and this point has been made over and over again in the analysis by various folks, including those on NPR who were looking at it yesterday, does it matter that we have, what we saw yesterday was almost exclusively Republican speaking?
Well, I think there's a purpose to that.
Of course,
I think that's, you make a good point, Joe, that they've done that in order to make sure that people don't perceive this as some kind of a Democratic witch hunt.
Well, and they're also making the point that it was Trump who was demanding loyalty, even of potential witnesses being reminded to do, excuse in quotes, the right thing. So,
well, and I think it's really important when we're looking at the Republican Party, and it's clearly at the moment a grapple between the far-right Republicans and the moderate Republicans, you know, and which arm of the party is going to rise to the surface. So I think it's extraordinarily important that it was all Republicans for the most part yesterday.
So what do you make of that? I mean, who gets the upper hand here?
Around the far-right and the moderates?
Yes.
It's up in the air at the moment, and yesterday's election proved that. You know, it depends where you are in the country. But that is, to me, that is the fight at the moment, is which wing of the Republican Party. It's much deeper than in the Democratic in terms of far left or, you know, center Democrat. There's much less of a divide than in the Republican Party right now. And that is what's going to determine, you know, the next chapter of our country. So it feels very important to keep working towards lifting up the moderate voice and trying to show up what is going, what's wrong with the, you know, what is detrimental to the country and the future of the country with the far right Republicans.
So who's on first?
Oh, I was thinking about that this morning. I think it's a it's a dead heat. I think right now it could go either way. But, you know, the Trump endorsed candidates are 70% of them are winning. So I would say the far rights are in the lead. I don't know. What do you all think?
We're losing.
Democrats. Mm-hmm.
Democrats are losing.
So here is a letter for you, Rosemary, that I will take and I will fold and I will put in a little box.
So I can keep it
wrap
forever.
It and put a bow on it and okay. hand it to you.
Yeah.
I haven't heard anyone mention, oh no, now I'm reading the wrong letter. How good is, how cool, that's not what I wanted to do.
That's okay.
Oh, damn it. The question was, I can't find it. Basically, they're blaming the press corps for not being on this. And if this was seen by people within the White House, within the West Wing, how could that talk not have spread to the press corps? And the letter writer used the word gullible. White House press corps.
I don't think they were gullible. I have excoriated the press corps in the past. Don't see the need for it. You should be out investigating agencies and people. However, in this case, there have been deliberate attempts to shut out, to deceive, to belittle reporters who were reporting the truth. Yep. And let us not recall that right now you're hearing one of the talking points of the right is that, oh, we knew all this. There's nothing new in here. And that's because pretty much that's true. The press corps has reported about his erratic mm-hmm. behavior, his stupid temper, his babyish behavior. What else was in there? Secret Service abuses. We've had stuff with that. Remember after he exposed the Secret Service guys to his COVID when he was in the hospital. So all of this has been...
I only want to interrupt because the which many people have written to was the same vehicle.
It's supposedly, the same vehicle.
That he was in... when he took his joyride around Walter
right.
Reed.
It appears to be the same one. I don't know how many the Secret Service has. Right. And they did explain that there is a beast. That's the main presidential limousine. But that's not what he right. was in that day. But that is what she said. You know, hey, did you hear what happened
what
in the
said.
Beast?
Yes.
Well, there may be
yes.
a generic reference.
That's what I thought, Alan, yes. that like any vehicle he was in. But no, she says the jargon is the beast is that limousine. And that's mm-hmm. not what he was in. So automatically, that kind of you can impeach your whole testimony. You've got to.
You could try.
You got to try to get somebody else.
In fact,
else.
They are trying.
Of course.
I mean, you know, every jot and tittle that they could possibly bring up.
But the point about the press is they're the wrong people to blame right now. This story, they have doggedly pulled at the strings. They continue to talk to every candidate who supports the big lie, who helped Trump in his little effort to overthrow the government here. That much of that until the committee did what it's doing now, very important, pulling it all together, reminding you of what you've already been told. But now we can tell you the context. And that's why it's so impressive.
And now it's mm-hmm. people who are in the White House testifying under oath. And I think,
yes.
you know, one of the things that came out last night, you know, they had shown a floor plan of the White House. I've never been in that part of the White House. I have been down underneath. Yeah. It's much smaller than you would realize. And if you actually saw the photo, and it was shown on several of the TV channels last night, literally her desk to the Oval Office is maybe 15, 20 feet, it looked like. And when Trump says, I didn't even know this person, I never saw them. I mean, Trump couldn't have left his office without walking past her.
Mrs. Lanningham was very close to Martin Sheen in most of that show.
Oh, yeah. And then left. Ooh, yeah. Okay, there's one.
We have to take a break.
I
have to stop you, Kristen, because we just have to take a break. And Ray's got news. I think he has a skin condition he wants to tell you about. We'll be right back after this. Good morning. It's a Frank Zappa Wednesday here on the Roundtable, playing the music of Frank Zappa. You can see the playlist posted on our website, wamc.org/roundtable, and find out about all of the songs that we've been playing this morning. All right, I'm going to continue with the letters. Please Keep your letters short and to the point. I'll get to as many as we possibly can. And panel, if you hear anything that strikes you, please jump in, and I'd love to hear from you. I was shocked by Cassidy's explosive testimony at the January 6th hearing, writes Robert. But please help me reconcile what she told the committee about Trump's disgusting actions with her seeking a job at Mar-a-Lago after Biden's inauguration. I don't get it.
Well, you know, I thought about that a lot. She had a job in the White House, right?
Yeah.
So why in the world, she accepted the authority of the president, so why in the world would we fault her for trying to get a job at Mar-a-Lago?
But
I mean, that's who she is.
You're right. But I think the flip side to that is if things were as egregious and horrible as she made him out to be yesterday, mm-hmm. and you have an out from that job.
Yes.
Why would you, if Trump was such a beast, if you will, then why go to
Here's the
him?
Answer. She's 25 years old. She's working in the White House.
Right.
She's at what exactly. Some people would consider the pinnacle of a career at 25.
Right.
And let us not forget.
And actually, she was much younger. She was much younger.
At the time,
you're
absolutely
she's 26
right.
now.
She's 20,
so, but yes,
yeah.
I thought about that last night. I was like, how did she get that job at, I mean, she was 19 or something, you know?
Well, because Let's Trump likes
it.
Young women
Depending
and
on
likes
how
pretty
long
young
she was
women working
there.
For him. But the other thing, too, is in January, when she was seeking the job at Mar-a-Lago, did we know as much as we do now? She never said what she saw was horrible and egregious. It's only when it's been put in the context of overall what happened that we see it as horrible and egregious.
Do you mind that inconsistency, Rosemary?
Not at all. I thought she was she did exactly what Liz Cheney was hoping she would do, made the president look unstable and in charge of the chaos, and that's all she has to do. And Cheney was careful to say this testimony will be the basis for what you're going to hear going forward. It's a setup.
Ellis writes to us and says, MAGA crowd will gain strength from yesterday's hearing. Trump said he was going to the Capitol, but Secret Service stopped him. Trumpists will now pull out all stops to discredit Hutchinson. Not surprised if they dig up dirt on her. Hopefully she got all A's on her elementary school report cards. Most jarring but not surprising reveal was witness tampering by the Trump mobsters. That from Harris.
Well, you know, I would say one thing. You know, there was a lot of speculation about why she suddenly... You know, why they had to do this yesterday, because they had announced the break and stuff. Mm-hmm. And
because it
you
was
know,
a
she
security
changed,
threat against
Well, some
her.
Was security. Some was she changed lawyers. Mm-hmm. I have a feeling
I have a feeling
she got a new lawyer who said, look, you'd better be doing this testimony. You'd better do this
I
stuff
agree.
Because you're going to be culpable.
But she must have had some not. Feelings about that, Jim, because she did have a Trump-supplied lawyer up until this change.
Exactly.
So you don't change lawyers unless you're troubled by something they're doing.
I will maybe.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting to hear more about that as it unpacks, because she definitely is, you know, feeding herself to the wolves and opening herself up to so much. And so we do want to hear more about what motivated all of that.
Can I point out that this is not the first time a young woman in a relatively lowly position has been the whistleblower? I was reminded.
It wasn't so low, Rosemary.
Yeah. Well. No. It's pretty low compared to the president of the United States, who her testimony is going against. That's what I mean, the relative power. Yeah. But it reminds me of Fawn Hall. Joe looked up the name. Yeah. Remember her, the young woman who revealed what really happened with the Iran-Contra scheme?
North.
It came from Oliver North's secretary. Uh-huh. And in the Facebook case we just heard, that was a woman also. There's something about information from inside is extremely powerful. You cannot get it any other way than people within the organization who feel bad about what's happening, and that conscience seems to belong a lot to women, so applause to her.
Yep.
All right, so just to give the other side a shot here, Trump likes young women, Rosemary. Creepy Joe kissing and fondling every woman he gets near, including children, smelling their hair. Ugh!
Not quite the same, however, may I say, as walking into a dressing room of young women getting ready for a beauty pageant. Come on. He's just
I was going to say,
I would only add how many a beauty pageant that he owned.
Yeah,
how many
exactly.
people have accused Biden 24. Of rape?
24. Oh, rape. Oh, no, I'm sorry. That was Trump has been accused by 24 women of sexual
Biden,
harassment
Biden
charges up to rape.
Zero.
Well, he did have that one charge. Tara Reid, wasn't that her name?
Oh, right.
And that was completely discredited. So 24 to 1.
Okay.
Does anyone really know that that Hutchins, and this is a gap in my knowledge. I did not know about this until it was brought up on the show. But does anyone really know that she wanted to go to Florida? Trump was the one that brought that up. Is he just making it up?
Good question.
All right. Hi, panel. According to one expert on MSNBC last night, Trump was not riding in the beast, as you had all said. The Secret Service says it has been cooperating with the committee from the beginning. I doubt the committee would lead Hutchinson into questions about the possible attack
good
without
point.
Verifying the detail first.
Well, it's true. Yeah, but isn't that what she said? Didn't she say he was in the beast?
No, what she said was
I misremembered.
This was a third party thing. Her boss calls her in,
right?
And the Secret Service guy is sitting there, and the boss goes, "Did you hear what happened in the beast?" So it's implied. Did he make a mistake? Mm. Did she quote him wrong? Was it not? Or is the whole thing a lie? We really don't know that definitively.
Right.
Okay. But
we'd
I
have
think,
to hear from that Secret Service person,
correct.
And that's unlikely to happen at this point.
But we have heard that the Secret Service is disturbed by some of the testimony.
Well, yeah.
Yes.
That's out there.
Well, and again,
they should be. It makes them look. I'm sorry, I'm talking over you. Go ahead, please.
No, they did say they were going to make some sort of statement in the coming days.
Right.
So we'll see.
I think they should be disturbed. They come off not just this strangling incident that we're centering on, but you have the president trying to command them to go to the a whole lot of their mm-hmm. procedures, I think, are now coming into focus that they don't want attention to, and they must be looking at them.
It's so scary. The president of the United States, finger on the button.
Take the mags down.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, the Secret Service should be worried about that.
Yeah, so I was going to say, you know, we keep focusing on this one episode because it's the one, but let's just remember a few other things that came out. One, she's the first one under oath who has really clearly made it clear that Trump aides knew the risk of violence before January 6th.
Sir.
We know that she's the first one to say Trump knew that the January 6th people had weapons on them and a list of what the weapons were. She was the first one to say, you know, she may not be the first one, but she corroborated that the White House counsel had raised concerns about what Trump was saying on January 6th. She made it very clear that, you know, regardless of what happened in the car, Trump wanted to go to the Capitol
correct.
On January 6th. You know, and then that during that time when the riot was going on, that Trump knew it was happening, was watching it on TV, and was saying, you know, was getting tweets from his own family telling him to stop. And she didn't talk about the tweets, but she said, you know, very clearly during that time, she overheard Trump himself saying, "I don't care. They're on my side. They're going to," I mean, I forget the exact wording, but she quoted it as closely as she could. She was, I mean, extremely credible, and she was very clear on which things she heard directly, which things she heard second person, and which things she heard.
She was,
you know,
very
things.
Good.
And
witness.
And I think that's crucial because, you know, this one about the car was, you know, one of the ones where she said, someone told me, right? The telephone game, right? But there were others where she said, "I heard Trump say, I heard Meadows say."
I was standing next to him when he did this.
Yes, exactly.
And Mark Meadows does not come off. She really, she
likes
her boss, but he did not come out well in this either. That he stood by, he knew the president was doing something dangerous.
Closed the door of the car.
Closed the door to push her out. You have to suspect he was talking to perhaps the president himself. That was very interesting. Yeah. So.
All right.
She was very, very well rehearsed. That's for sure. She was very well rehearsed.
Well, she was poised. I mean, she was really good.
I don't know if that was rehearsed.
Well, I mean, they were going back and forth between the testimony she had given previously and sort of what she was saying on the day. So I might believe, you know, if people are going to use rehearsed as a bad term, certainly she knew what was coming on yesterday's testimony.
But in that first set where they kept cutting back,
that was not something where she would have known in advance exactly what.
Well, you have to be well rehearsed for a day like yesterday.
Yeah.
You know, you have to. She had her script in front of her. She had her talking points. She was very deliberate about the phrasing that she used. And you have to do that. You're going, you know, it's going to be all over everywhere, and it's going to be for posterity inside the archives. So, yeah, no, it's a positive thing that she was well rehearsed. And I can see that that is something that, you know, is going to get picked apart.
All this throwing food and grabbing wheels is dramatic, but not important. What is important is the firsthand hearing that Trump not only knew the protesters had weapons, but wanted the metal screening devices to be removed so they could come in armed. This is the kind of information that could lead to criminal investigators.
Well, both are interesting.
I would agree with you, Rosemary.
Yeah, I mean, if you're the kind of person who would, a grown man, most powerful person, yeah, and you're throwing stuff against the wall like a child in a tantrum, certainly that gives credence to the idea that you could think to overthrow the U.S. government.
A lot of people are right.
But could that lead to legal charges? It didn't seem that him knowing about the weapons was an actionable charge. It only sounded like the witness tampering was something that could be investigated.
I mean, he was saying, you know, let them into my rally. But I think the part that's different is he urged the crowd to go to the Capitol. He urged a crowd that he knew was carrying weapons to go to the Capitol.
Fight like hell.
Whether that's technically,
and he said he was going with them.
He said he was going to lead them.
Well,
yeah,
and apparent, and you know, sort of, he got. There was all this stuff about, boy, he said he was going to leave them, and he didn't leave them. He wanted to leave them.
I mean, yeah, let's not forget that he's been trying to back away from that. Oh, I only meant it metaphysically, I was going to leave them. That's not what he meant. Yeah. We saw that in the testimony.
Yeah, no, it was very clear.
There's definitely a part of me that is, like, wishing that he had led them.
Yeah.
Let's see. We have a couple of minutes before bottom of the hour break. Tim writes, I haven't heard anyone mention the fact that Trump knew that many people there on January 6th were armed. And from my understanding, and correct me if I am wrong, but he didn't just find that out on January 6th. I think January 2nd, January 3rd.
Right.
Because he knew about the Proud Boys and he knew they were coming armed, right? Wasn't that come out in the testimony yesterday?
Came out very explicitly in the whole point about the magnetometers is they said, look, we have so some people coming in who'd already gone through it had confiscated all sorts of things, and then there were another couple thousand people outside who weren't coming through because
they didn't want the weapons
confiscated. And that's what was reported to the president.
Right.
And the president said, give them back the weapons, let them in with the weapons, and then told a group where he knew that at least those people outside had these dangerous weapons to go down to the Capitol and fight like hell. I mean, you know, they're...
Yeah.
You can call it circumstantial, but I can't find any other way of explaining what he had in mind.
I have no idea. We talked about this earlier, Jim. What a smoking gun would look like. I mean, would it be a written confession by Donald? Is that really that will prove it to anybody?
No, because no one would believe him.
You're right. I mean, like, we had a really good handle on this on January
7th.
The morning of January 7th, right. Okay, this from Barbara. Please name one top-level Republican elected official aside of Kinzinger and Cheney who had come out against this orange monster. They are all deflecting whatabouting as if the too high cost of gas is the equivalent of the organized Republican-supported armed violence against elected officials and, of course, the Constitution. Battle stations. Educate, agitate, organize. Our lives are at stake. Barbara.
Good job, Barbara.
All right. We go to Catherine, who writes, hello, a commentator for a New York Times article says he hopes that Cassidy Hutchinson isn't a plant because it was almost too good to be true. He suggests that she may be a plant to derail what has been a powerfully successful hearing thus far. thought that was interesting. It is interesting.
Did Trump try to indicate she was a plant?
I don't know
where that came from. I didn't hear that before.
Certainly the testimony in, you know, the private testimony to the committee that later got played, it's hard to believe you could have been a plant for that.
You know, we've talked about the heroism of Liz Cheney, and I've poo-pooed it saying this is good, but she still has abhorrent beliefs. But I have to say, she's doing this in the face of a primary challenge that she may not win. She's in trouble.
Right, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And she's still proceeding with this. I have to say, I really do admire that. She's
well, let's remember who she is, and let's remember that she is...
Spawn of the devil, yes, I remember.
Well, I wouldn't say that, but I would say a representative of the other side of the Republican Party, which is not in power right now.
Right.
Yeah. Let's see.
Well, and it may be a long-term play, too. I mean, you know, she may lose this one, but if the Republicans... If the anti-Trump Republicans, whatever we want to call that group, eventually come back into power, Cheney's going to be one of their leaders.
And what would you have her do?
Yeah.
In other words, what
would
you
have... But frankly, I think...
She has integrity.
That's what
she
I think is
going on. She has intelligence. We are not ill-served by her, even though we don't agree with her views, especially on abortion. But
Well said. Yeah.
We go to Melissa, who writes to us and says there has been discussion that Mike Pence may be subpoenaed. If Cassidy Hutchinson's testimony isn't enough to move that process forward, then what would be? As I am ever the optimist, I keep hoping that Karen Pence and the rest of the former VP family will convince him that if he has any chance of ending up on the right side of history, that his only hope is to come forward, testify, and thus do the honorable thing.
But he's asking himself, how can I be president of the United
how
States?
How can I
That's
do that
what it's
and
all
be president?
About.
Exactly.
As Liz Cheney so profoundly warned her fellow Republicans at an earlier hearing, Donald Trump will be gone, but your dishonor will remain.
That's a great quote. That'll be the quote remembered
in
history.
People forget.
Is it possible that one person talks at a time and not attempt to finish each other's sentences? I think that's about us, so sorry.
I apologize. We're all into this.
I think we're all guilty of this.
Yeah.
So,
yes.
We're excited.
That letter got me thinking, what are other times where somebody's vice president has then run against the person for whom they were vice president?
Never. They pointed that out. Even Nixon, who hated Spiro Agnew and was himself a federal criminal eventually, he did not try to kill his vice president or put him at risk.
So this would be the first time if Mike Pence runs against Donald Trump for the GOP nomination
We're sitting vice president.
We have to put that on hold because we have to take a break.
He wouldn't win.
Sorry.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Jim Hendler, Rosemary Armeo, and Kristen Van Genhoven. I just want to quickly mention, Kristen is doing a really cool project for Wham Theater, and she'll be with us with our dear friend Jane Atkinson coming up at a little bit after 11 o'clock.
That's
about
terrific.
11:10.
Cool.
So we look forward to Kristen all the time this morning. That's right. There are nothing better than that, I would say.
My neighbor.
We have so many letters here, and I've been going through, I'm taking out all the one about scabies, and I'm just focusing on the ones about the subject.
Are you getting some good tips?
I'm getting a lot of stuff. But I just want a couple I want to read, and then we'll move on. But I think I've identified three here that I'd like to. A couple of listeners have brought this up, and I think it is important. I believe we mentioned it only once, though, and that is that they wish that we would talk more about this idea of how serious they were talking about invoking the 25th Amendment within the White House.
Oh, that's a good point.
And that one of the things that they assume, letter writers are saying, that one of the things that they assume is down the line, this will become also a part of these hearings. But that is interesting to think that that was very much a discussion among who and why doesn't that work?
It's one of the big black holes in the story yet not filled in. there was apparently some exchange of power, too, because we end up with Pence talking to the military and the National Guard rather than Trump when Trump refused to do it. So he took over presidential power. And that, of course, is connected to the 25th Amendment, where they're seeing the president act this way and then refusing to undo the consequences of his actions at the start of the riot. And so they're meeting to say, what should we do about this? And it was, as I understand it, Pence who... He has to act, much like the certification. He's the star of that procedure, and he wanted nothing to do with it.
But, you know, there are always the maldoers who bring up all the things that could happen to them if they proceed the way that they're talking about it. And, I suspect there's a lot of that that goes on all the time.
Mm-hmm. One of the letters that we got on that 25th Amendment issue was from David, who says Trump was right about one thing. Mike Pence didn't have the courage to do what he needed to be done. He needed to assume the acting presidency under the 25th Amendment.
You're right. And we've pointed this out. Pence gets no, you know, hero points the way we're giving them to Liz Cheney, because he tried everything he could to comply with what Trump wanted. In other words, the overthrow. He consulted lawyers. He looked into all the contingencies. How could he get around this? Talked to former vice presidents, and then only informs Trump of what he's going to do the morning of January 6th. What would have happened if he had done that much earlier? As not me, but other thinkers have said, maybe nobody would have come from around the country figuring it would be futile. There was no action to decertify. You just don't know, because he didn't have the courage to act before then. And then, of course, he's downplayed the consequences and the happenstance of January 6th ever since it happened.
Maybe.
This is a letter from Roger that I don't know if it's true or not, so I'm going to read it. Panel, is anyone puzzled by the fact that not one of the 800 people who were arrested on a weapons charge, no one was arrested on a weapons charge. Not one gun was confiscated. I don't know that that's true.
They didn't make the arrest January 6th. They made it much later. Remember, everybody went home, and then the FBI and the begins tracking them all down.
Right. The entire crowd came to overthrow a government of the United States, and no one brings a gun. It's confusing to me. Now they want us to believe there were weapons.
Well, so again, so what was reported was yesterday that a group of people who wanted to come in and see the president's rally were told, you know, had to go through metal detectors and were told, hey, you can't bring that gun in here. And some were confiscated. Many people seeing that chose to stay outside with the assumption that they had the weapons. Then there was also some radio chatter that was reported of what actual police were saying as they were watching people march down. And they were saying things like,
he's in a tree. He's got an AR-15.
You know, that was being reported and recorded. And, you know, so we do know there were weapons there. We do know there were confiscations. The arrests weren't for weapons charges, I suspect, for a lot of political reasons. But one is what Rosemary said is the arrest didn't happen then and there.
Yeah.
If the police had started arresting people, needed a massive police force to come down. And the national, you know, we already know they couldn't get the National Guard there. They couldn't get the military help, et cetera, until later when people started overruling the president.
Jim also has the answer to Jennifer's question about former times when vice presidents ran against their.
Yes. Thanks to somebody on Quora who asked this question. There were three times that a vice president ran against their former president. One was a technicality, because George Washington's vice president was the only other person who could have been elected, so we won't count that one. In 1800 was an actual contest between vice president and president, which was John Adams sought re-election to be defeated by Thomas Jefferson, who I guess had been his vice. And then the last one was in 1940, when John Garner was FDR's vice president. And when FDR was elected for the third term, Garner ran against him, not against the policies, but against presidents shouldn't have third terms.
Yeah.
third term.
So this is only the fourth
and
time.
And none of them ever, none of them won, right? None of them won.
No.
No.
All right. Let's quickly move on.
None of them won. Garner didn't win. No.
I'm not sure what happened in Adams versus Jefferson.
Jefferson was the second president.
Bob Griffin, who is often on this program on Wednesdays, but was unable to make it today, writes to us and says, from my experience in the DHS, that is the Department of Homeland Security, informally, whatever vehicle the president is in was called the Beast, much like whatever plane the president is in is called Air Force One.
Oh, that's
officially
interesting.
The term is the name of the fleet of armored limousines used by the Secret Service for POTUS, but the Suburbans were also often referenced as beasts.
Okay, I'm sorry. That is different than what was on television.
We keep learning.
And that's,
that's good info. Yeah.
Thank you,
that's
Bob.
Thank you, Bob.
So then they can't impugn her testimony by saying she got it wrong.
And if you are able to take part, why weren't you here today?
Having a former undersecretary of DHS would be very
would have been nice,
today.
Right? Would have been nice, but no.
But he and I will be doing a Vox Pop on July 14th. Oh, did I?
No, that's good. That's good.
What's the topic?
Cybersecurity.
Oh, cool.
That's a
lying in my hammock eating a hot dog. I'm going to listen to Jim and Bob talk about cybersecurity. Yes, sounds great. Wave a flag.
Now you've made me hungry.
Going on. All right, let's go to, I think we have time for one other topic. Let me check our final timings here, but I believe we do. I do want to talk quickly about the primary results. That obviously was the other big story yesterday. Kathy Hochul.
Current governor.
What's the word I'm looking for?
Replacement governor?
Yeah, interim. No, what is it? Acting. Acting governor.
Is she? She took over.
The governor.
No, she's the governor.
Okay.
No, she's the governor, but she wasn't
elected.
But
she wasn't voted.
Right. Correct.
So that's right.
She's not acting. No.
Okay.
No, that's not acting.
All right. Never mind. It doesn't matter. Governor Hochul.
Right.
Of New York will face Representative Lee Zeldin in the fall.
Now, there's going to be a very potent contest. Just kidding.
Well, but they're okay, but they're saying.
Yeah.
They're saying, like, it's, I don't know. In this article in the Times, they make it sound like it's going to be close, and I never got that impression at all.
Certainly isn't my impression.
No. Meanwhile, in Illinois, Darren Bailey, a staunchly conservative state senator, will take on Governor J.B. Pritzker. Tina Peters, an election denier, lost her Secretary of State primary in Colorado. There was the other one that I wanted. What was the other one I wanted to get to? Help me. Trump endorsed election denier won the Illinois primary over a fellow representative, Representative Mary Miller of Illinois, who is
Colorado and Illinois were definitely the most interesting.
Yes. And isn't she the one that said, made the quote-unquote slip of the power of, she meant it.
Yeah.
They said she was supposed to say power of light, and instead she said the power of whites.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right to life, and she said white life.
Thank you. Representative Blake Morrill is Cheney ally, trounces primary challengers in Utah. Another story there. And so what do we make of some of the takeaways from Tuesday? Anybody?
I think this whole thing about Trump endorsements and things like that has to be looked at very carefully. I haven't got all the data on it. You know, I do the data geek thing, and this is just stuff where it's not always easy to get the data. But most of the people Trump has endorsed were already ahead in the polls. Mm-hmm. So really, if you look at the ones where somebody who Trump endorsed came from behind, that has happened, but it's certainly not 70-30. It's certainly a less often situation. And some of them have been very close, like the Oz one. So you know, it really is hard to get some of the details. So, and of course, a lot of this is based on polling, which we already know is problematic.
So Trump is nothing if not a marketing branding genius. Yeah. And this is deliberate.
Yeah.
I mean, his strategy has been to look for people who are going to win anywhere and pick them so that he can go to his base and say, see, I'm the kingmaker.
Yep.
That's his, the appearance is there, no matter how he's manufactured it.
So on the other side of that, there is an article in the Times about Democrats working very hard to, because they have found that it's much easier to win a general election if you handpick your opponent. Realizing a lot of this from the 2012 Missouri Senate race, that Democrats have this strategy now that they used quite effectively yesterday in Colorado and Illinois, where they try to get the most far-right Republican who can be painted as an extremist.
So they
and
flood
Trump.
The
and their candidate. Yes.
They put a lot of money into Trump-like candidates, which I find
it's a good
scary.
Strategy.
You know, it's a necessary strategy. I'm not going to call it a good strategy. I really hate it when, you know, one side has to go down into mud to wrestle with the other side.
Yeah,
but you
good
know
point.
That's where
good
we
point.
Are.
The primary
that's
system
where we are
so
in American politics.
Date.
Well, that's the, another story.
Why do we even have to have primaries? And yes, Alan, this is in the realm of let's get rid of the Electoral College and everything will be fine. But our primary system just sets up extremists, and it's leading us down this very, very dangerous path.
Well, especially I'm a big fan. I'm a big fan of primaries, Rosemary. I think we cannot allow a bunch of guys or women in the back room to determine who the candidates are going to be. So if it's not going to be a primary system, what is it?
Ranked order voting, perhaps?
Well, that's a possibility. And, you know, politicians aren't happy to have that. For a lot of reasons.
We only have a minute, but I was struck last night as the results were coming in. And if it wasn't, I mean, if it wasn't true, it would be funny if it wasn't just horribly depressing. But on at least seven occasions, they would say, so-and-so is a Republican candidate, won the primary against pause. So-and-so was indicted on wire fraud charges in 1996. I mean, it was like everyone, you know, is like, oh, is currently in court battling sexual harassment charges. Like, oh my goodness.
People don't care. People don't care.
No.
I'm also curious, do we have the stats on the voter turnout?
I think it depends on the state, depends on the
how was it
on the congressional district. I'll find out. I don't know offhand.
Yeah.
The last numbers I saw for New York, it was still being counted, and we only had like
60%.
I mean, I can't imagine it was very high, right?
Because that's the other thing about the primaries, right? We can't get people to come and vote in them.
Not only the primaries, but the general elections too, where 50% is high.
All right, we are.
I mean, that's disgusting.
We'll end with those words. That's disgusting.
Which could have been how we started.
That's right. Yes, discussing my back crud or
it looks terrible.
Politics.
By the way,
thank you.
I just want our listeners to know that I witnessed it.
You saw it.
I saw it.
Oh, yeah. So
poor Joe.
Kristen, you hold tight. We'll get to you. You'll be back with us in about 20 minutes with Jane Atkinson talking about what's going on at Wham Theater, which is very exciting. Alan, thank you very much.
And
really good to see you.
Thank you. Can't wait to hear my neighbor, Jane.
Yes. Neighbor
Yay!
Jane. She is a force. So much fun. Jim, thank you very much for being here. And you know what? I just read the I know I'm out of time, but Tetherless World Chair of Computing, Web, and Cognitive Sciences and Founding Director of the Institute for Data, Artificial Intelligence, and Computation at RPI. That is a new title. We congratulate you on it.
It was
announced yesterday.
As of Tuesday, I got the
Tetherless.
Promotion.
Congratulations. Rosemary, as always.
Congrats.
Thank you very much. We'll be right back.